Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. We're all still here on this December 21st, 2012. I'm Phil Latzman. Good to have you with us. Our weekly mission to keep South Floridians informed on local, regional, state news and issues affecting our community, our state, and with a panel of the area's top journalists. And this week, they are as follows. Juan Vasquez is Deputy Editorial Board Editor for the Miami Herald. And he joins us from our WLRN studios at the Herald. Welcome back, Juan.
Thank you, Phil. Glad to be here.
Michael Grunwald is Miami-based writer for Time Magazine, accomplished author with a new book out called The New Deal. Welcome back, Mr. Grunwald.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
And Mary Ellen Kloss is Capitol Bureau Chief for the Miami Herald, and she joins us from our sister station WFSU in Tallahassee. Hi, Mary Ellen. Happy holidays.
Hi, happy holidays to you.
And happy holidays, Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah to everyone in our listening audience and all our panelists. Great to have you along. It's your show as well, and you can tweet us at WLRN is how you follow us on Twitter. We all have individual Twitter accounts, too. We can give those out a bit later. We also encourage you for more information and all the past shows to like us on Facebook. Look for the Florida Roundup on WLRN on Facebook and like us there. So we'll begin with the obvious, really no way to avoid it this week, the solemn story coming out of Connecticut, the tragedy there where Florida sort of has an indirect, it's really every community in the country has a direct connection to what happened in Connecticut. But Florida will soon issue its 1 millionth concealed weapons permit, and that has some gun control advocates worried that what happened there could more easily happen here, or perhaps, as some gun rights folks have told me this week, gun rights advocates, it makes it less likely. And we this week asked members of the Public Insight Network how the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting has affected their views on guns, if at all. And one of the first things that came out this week was Republican State Representative Dennis Baxley says schools should not be gun-free zones any longer. He says schools would be safer if teachers and principals were authorized to carry guns. And Mary Ellen, this is the same legislator who sponsored the Stand Your Ground law, which got a lot of attention here in the state of Florida in 2012.
Yes, and you know, we'll see where this all goes. There seems to be a mounting consensus from both education officials and some legislators to put school resource officers into every school and have them be armed. That seems to be the latest wave of suggestions. In fact, the NRA just this morning announced that that is something they would like to see. So that seems to be the direction. Florida schools, some schools have school resource officers, others do not. But allowing them to be armed would be kind of the next passage.
Representative Baxley of Ocala, by the way, said this, quote, "We need to be more realistic at looking at this policy and our zealousness to protect people. What we've inadvertently done is made them a target, a helpless target, is exactly what a deranged person is looking for, where they cannot be stopped." Now, Baxley is stepping back a little bit from those comments. He's not trying to make a law out of this, but Florida Education Association spokesman Mark Pudlow still says the comments were ill-advised.
In some cases, they may be able to help prevent something like that, but we also know that there's other times when guns get stolen. They might get used in a different way than they were intended. So I think we ought to be real cautious about supporting something like that.
Juan Vasquez, what's been the reaction from the readers of the Herald and the editorial department to some of those statements? Anything you've heard this week?
The letters have been almost overwhelmingly sort of anti-NRA, pro-gun control, but we have had some exceptions. I think they reflect a general revulsion at what happened in Newtown, but there also seems to be an understanding that it's not likely that anything significant is going to change in Florida, given the makeup of the legislature and Governor Scott.
And I spoke this week with former GOP Senator George Lemieux, who said arming more citizens might not be a bad thing.
In states where people have the ability to carry a concealed weapon, violence could be down because it's a deterrent.
But South Florida Congresswoman and DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz believes just the opposite, as she told WFOR-TV in Miami this week.
It is far too easy to get a weapon in the state of Florida, and it makes this kind of gun violence more likely.
Michael, this is an issue that perhaps is more polarizing than any and split along party lines, and especially here in the state of Florida.
Well, look, I mean, what sets the United States apart from other countries, and aside from our, you know, on the issue of guns, is we have a lot more guns and a lot more gun violence. You know, we're not really exceptional when it comes to our mental health services or our violent video games. Other countries have that. So there's understandably a turn towards looking at gun control. But for people who support that, the problem is that the House of Representatives is controlled by Republicans, and they really have no interest in gun control. So there's going to be a lot of talk, but I would be shocked if at the federal level there's a lot of action.
And on the federal level, one thing they could take action on is the assault weapons ban. Many people are calling on Congress to reinstitute the assault weapons ban that was in effect from 1994 to 2004 before it was let to expire. This week in Washington, Florida senators talked about whether they'd support such a reinstatement. Here in order are Democrat Bill Nelson and Republican Marco Rubio.
I think this might have some impetus behind doing the bill again.
There's a lot of questions to be answered, and I think without prejudging it, I think what we're going to learn is that guns was only part of what happened here, and that there are other factors at play, but we need to learn more from it. Like everybody else, I mean, I'm just shell-shocked by it. It's still really haunted.
You've done reporting, Mary Ellen, on this, of sort of playing off of what Michael just said about the political will to do something here in the state of Florida. What does that seem like in the state capitol?
I think that both Michael and Juan are exactly right that getting any stricter gun laws in Florida is extremely high bar. This is a legislature that is very pro-gun. In fact, it is one of the most effective things you can do to defeat somebody for re-election to the Florida legislature is to basically accuse them of being anti-gun. So I just really think it's very unlikely that we are going to see at the state level any stricter gun laws. The direction things may go is fortifying schools. That may be something that is open. And whether that even solves the problem, I think it should be a question that's debated here. I think Marco Rubio mentioned that there is the whole issue of what do we know about what caused the shooter to shoot. And the other thing that is, I think, evident in Florida is there is not much of a safety net for mental health. And there's those questions, I think, that it would be wise for us to start looking at as well.
Yeah, what about that, Mary Ellen? You bring that up. A lot of issues with social programs in Florida. Is there enough money? Is there enough resources for people like an Adam Lanza, if that should happen in some school environment or home environment here? Are you concerned that there are not enough social safety nets to prevent something like that?
Well, I had a really interesting conversation this week because I was on the airplane next to a forensic psychiatrist, and he kind of laid out for me how the situation we had back in the 60s when we used to institutionalize people who were mentally ill was absolutely the wrong direction. So we moved the opposite direction. But since then, the safety net has been fraying, and we've lost money for mental health all across the board. There are waiting lists in Florida for people who need this kind of assistance. And those waiting lists in the past decade have just continued to grow. The other thing, it's my understanding that it's very difficult to get insurance coverage for a lot of these illnesses. And I know there have been laws that have attempted to been passed through the Florida legislature that would require insurance companies to pay for mental health treatment. They have failed consistently, but they've been able to find other ways to get at it, such as requiring insurance companies to pay for autism treatment. That's a different kind of mental health need, but that just kind of shows the difficulty of moving in this direction.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. That's Mary Ellen Kloss. She's Capitol Bureau Chief for the Miami Herald. She's with us from Tallahassee. With us here in Miami, Michael Grunwald from Time Magazine and author of The New Deal, a book that's out and very prescient and current events. And we'll talk more about the fiscal cliff and its impacts here. And he has some thoughts on that. We'll talk about that a bit later on. Also with us, Juan Vasquez from the Miami Herald's editorial board, and you are welcome to join us. In fact, we've invited members, a pre-invite, if you will, the VIP members of the show, the PIN Network folks, the Public Insight Network folks, will have their say on this issue, and we're going to talk more about it later on in the show, but obviously we'd love to hear from you along the way. And if we have time, we'll get to some of your calls at 800-743-WLRN. We're also tweetable at WLRN. And again, our Facebook page, the Florida Roundup, for feedback anytime. The Broward County, the second largest in the state, sixth largest in the nation, held its first school board meeting since the shooting in Connecticut. The proceedings began with a moment of silence. Superintendent Robert Runcie says the district's been proactive. But, you know, Paul, skip over that. Let's go to Paul Leary, our technical director. David Gault, who is the chief of Broward School's Special Investigative Unit, he told members of that state leaders in Tallahassee must help step in to provide additional officers for budget-racked schools.
In reality, we cannot put a police officer at every home, business, or parking lot. But in reality, we can put a police officer at every school. Whose responsibility it is to fund the program, therein lies the dilemma. Clearly, the school district does not have the funding to support this function in its entirety, and clearly, our municipal partners have financial challenges of their own.
So a lot of pressure on the state there. You know, Juan Vasquez, is an issue of school safety. Is the state doing enough to make sure that schools are properly protected, as we sort of alluded to a little bit earlier?
Well, if you ask this of the superintendents here in South Florida, what they will say is, we are doing our best. They obviously have a school security program. Superintendent Carvalho here in Miami-Dade County, along with County Mayor Carlos Jimenez, they're co-authoring a piece that we'll be publishing on Sunday, talking about the things that they think need to be done and what steps they have already taken unilaterally to improve safety at the schools. But I think that they would definitely say they could use more help from the state.
Governor Rick Scott, by the way, has called on local school officials to review their security plans. On CNN this week, though, he refused to get specific about exactly what the state's response to the shooting would be, and he got into it with interviewer Soledad O'Brien over specifics.
I always want to sit back and say, okay, so what could we do better? And that's what I want to think about with this.
Okay, I think with all due respect, you're not going to answer my question. What thing are you willing to say would be a good start that you would bring to the table in any conversation about gun control?
Well, my approach on things like this is, one, respect the families, mourn their losses, make sure our schools are safe, and then start the conversation and listen to the Floridians.
Governor Scott, Michael Grunwald, given an A rating by the NRA, is he maybe afraid of jeopardizing that?
Well, I think we all know what he's saying. And it's important that you mention Governor Scott because, one of the themes of my book is that the way the Republican Party really has gone off the rails on some of these issues. You start to hear talk about arming teachers, the idea that they should like have a gun in their in their desk drawer, when any of us who's a parent of a boy, particularly a mischievous, curious boy like mine, that's crazy and that that's just going to lead to more bloodshed. You start to hear Republicans in Washington talking more about, forget about guns. We need to focus on mental health. When in fact, there was just, a pretty large health care bill that did a lot to pour resources into mental health. And they were nowhere to be seen on this. So really, this is a political issue. People talk about how you're not supposed to politicize tragedy. But really, those are the people who think that politics is supposed to be stupid and trivial. In fact, politics is important, and this is what it's about.
That's Michael Grunwald from Time Magazine, also with us. Juan Vasquez from The Herald and Mariana Kloss, who's The Herald's Tallahassee Bureau Chief. I'm Phil Latzman, and we did ask members of the Public Insight Network about the shooting and gun control and mental health and school safety and all that stuff, and we'll hear from those members a bit later on. It was a big week in Florida politics. 2013 isn't even here yet, but we can already see 2014 in Florida. We'll tell you why when we continue the discussion in just a moment. And we welcome you back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. And our guests today, Michael Grunwald, Mary Ellen Kloss, Juan Vasquez. I'm Phil Latzman. Your questions welcome for the panel. You can Always email us if you want to, thefloridaroundup@gmail.com. That's thefloridaroundup@gmail.com. We can also be reached by phone. We do have some callers on the line, and members of the Public Insight Network we'll hear from. But if you've got something for us and you want to sneak it in, 800-743-WLRN. We're tweetable at WLRN. Michael, you are Michael Grunwald on Twitter. Is that correct?
Mike Grunwald.
Okay. You can spell that one easier anyway, right? Mary Ellen Kloss, that's pretty easy. You can find her on Twitter. Juan, have you joined the Twitter revolution yet?
Not yet.
We'll get you in there at some point. By the way, I'm at Phil Latzman. Now, moving on to politics, and you can see it's kind of funny when a politician first gets on Twitter. You know, they don't quite know what to do with it. You know, some of them are later to the game than others. But anyway, speaking of them, most of them have their Twitter handles, and lawmakers in Washington are looking into Florida's voting trouble this year. And they heard from a guy who's been in the news a lot lately. In fact, he's starting to send out some more tweets these days, maybe an indication of the way things are. He says, a joke, that's the description that former Governor Charlie Crist gave Florida after the new voting laws put in place by his successor, Governor Rick Scott. Crist spoke out this week on Capitol Hill during a U.S. Senate committee hearing looking into problems at the polls this election cycle. He reminded the committee that while he was governor of Florida from 2007 to 11, he expanded early voting and voting by mail, particularly back in the 2008 election. We remember that. He also criticized Governor Scott for signing a new law reducing early voting days.
Florida, which 4 years earlier was a model for efficiency, became once again a late-night TV joke. Voters who wanted to vote early were frequently subjected to lines of 3 or 4 hours, and as Governor Scott refused to take action to ease the lines, in some cases those lines extended to 6 and 7 hours.
So the law passed by the Republican legislature, signed by Scott, reduced the number of early voting days from 14 to 8, including the Sunday before Election Day, which was the solstice of the polls day. We heard a lot about that. We saw the lines for early voting, not even talking about the lines for Election Day, but the early voting lines. So, Mary Ellen, you know these guys about as well as anyone. A pretty well-timed appearance in front of the Senate for Charlie Crist just a week after he declares himself a Democrat amid speculation that he wants his old job back. Any coincidence there?
No coincidence. And I can't tell you, I just think that Charlie Crist is so fortunate that this issue is one that he can start capitalizing on so quickly. It really only took a simple signature for Rick Scott to have pretty much eliminated this a month and a half ago. All he needed to do is win the second weekend of long lines during early voting was occurring. He just needed to do what Charlie Crist did, and that is open up another day of early voting, allow people to vote, and he would have said, I addressed it. He was called, you know, numerous legislators, Democrats all, were asking him to do that, and I think he could have put a bullet in this pretty easily, but he didn't. And it's really going to contribute to his difficulty in persuading even his own party that he should remain on the ticket.
Yeah, and of course there were polls that came out this week, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But before we get into the polls, he did have a response to some of those things on CNN this week. Florida's embattled governor says the law, he admitted, in fact, on CNN that the law needed to be changed. In that same interview you just heard a little bit earlier, he blamed long ballots and fewer early voting days for long lines at the polls. He's basically admitting it now. Scott's critics say those problems were caused by a voting bill he signed into law, as Mary Ellen documented. But the governor told CNN's Soledad O'Brien, and this is the continuation of that discussion, that he wasn't to blame for any of these problems.
You know, I complied with the law. You know, we had an election bill that was passed my first year in office by the legislature. It was approved by the Justice Department. So I complied with the law. And that's, you know, when you're the governor, you've got to comply with the law. And that's what I did. But we do need change. We've got to have a bipartisan group come together, Republicans and Democrats, and say, we've got to improve this.
As the governor, of course, he had the ability to veto that voting bill, but he did not. Juan Vasquez, anyone buying that?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that if this was indeed a ploy to keep Democrats and minorities from voting, it has been widely deemed a failure. And it backfired.
And Michael Grunwald, besides eliminating early voting days, the voting bill also allowed lawmakers to put lengthy amendments on the ballot. And if you voted, you had to read through them in three different languages and page through them. But that's another reason. But again, there's plenty of blame to go around here. But does the state bear most of it?
Well, everybody knew that this was a Republican bill to try to sort of crack down on Democratic-friendly early voting. And it's not a surprise that that Rick Scott went along with it. That said, I mean, as Mary Ellen mentioned, I mean, this is clearly opportunism by Governor Crist, who, you know, I like him. I thought he was a pretty good moderate governor. But then he decided he was going to, you know, then he got challenged by Marco Rubio, and suddenly he was a right-wing Republican in a primary, then quit, was an independent. Now he's trying to position himself as a liberal Democrat. It's sort of hard to follow his flip-flops. Now he's just came out for gun control, which he had always been against. It's going to be kind of dizzying to watch him over the next year.
Yeah, Juan, I'm interested in your opinion. I spoke to George Lemieux this week about he's obviously an ardent Republican, doesn't think that Democrats are going to buy into that. Do you think that Charlie Crist is going to be bought into by Democrats? It seemed like the poll this week showed that he might be, but how tough a job is that going to be for him?
Well, as it often is, the question for Democrats is going to be, what are the choices? Who else is going to run as a Democrat? Will anybody be able to compete with him in terms of name recognition? Will there be someone running for the Democratic nomination who has already won and lost? So these are some of the questions that I think the party has to grapple with and that Charlie Crist is looking at. He certainly seems to be to have an edge here in that he's out early. But I agree with Michael Grunwald that he's going to be labeled an opportunist and a person who has changed so much. He makes Governor Romney look like a pillar of consistency.
I remember, Phil, he was way up in the polls against Rubio, too. And I remember at the time saying that given a choice between a Republican and a Republican, Republicans are going to choose the Republican. And I think the same thing could happen in a Democratic primary, where given a choice between a Democrat and Charlie Crist, they might go with the Democrat.
All right. Now, back to the issue of election laws, because we were on that. There was a Miami-Dade grand jury that just actually issued this proclamation yesterday, 23 recommendations meant to prevent fraud in absentee balloting. Here is Miami-Dade State Attorney Catherine Fernandez-Rundle, who says it was inexcusable for Miami-Dade residents to be waiting in line at 1 in the morning after the presidential election was solved.
You know, I don't think any of us expected to see our process fail in absentee ballots in the primary and then fail at early voting, election day voting. I mean, who would have thought that in this day and age that we could have failed so terribly, but we did.
So the grand jurors say the state needs to give voters more days to vote early. These recommendations aimed at reforming Florida's absentee ballots. But I know, Mary Ellen, up where you are, that there's a lot of finger pointing towards local governments. So how much is the state trying to at least play off some of these problems on the local governments? And there certainly were issues with things down here as far as the way the local governments ran the elections. But are they trying to point fingers?
I think we are going to see some of that. That certainly has been the undercurrent, if not directly spoken by the governor and some other legislative leaders. They've, of course, convened another working group to look at it. They've asked county officials to present them with new recommendations. And so there will be more and more study. And, I think we'll end up with where we were at the beginning, and that is more early voting. The key thing will be, will they give election supervisors the flexibility to decide how many early voting sites and where they
right.
want them? The legislature really wants to prescribe and control that. So we'll see.
That's interesting. And as we did allude to, only 36% of Florida voters are approving of the job that Governor Scott is doing. This is a survey from Quinnipiac University, which surveyed over 1,200 registered voters in the past week. More than half of them say the governor does not deserve a second term in office. Here is Quinnipiac's Peter Brown, who says Scott may be vulnerable to an opponent in his own party.
Different voter groups all would like another candidate to challenge Mr. Scott for renomination, including a majority of Republicans.
And we could have talked about Charlie Crist, considered the front runner among Democrats. But is there what's the mentality up there right now, Mary Ellen, with the governor? Is he sort of fortressing himself? Is he making an effort? Does the administration realize or address the fact that he's so deeply unpopular right now?
Well, we have not heard a lot of people speaking out, suggesting that someone else will run. But there is definitely that conversation is taking place in a lot of circles behind the scenes. When 53% of Republicans, according to the Quinnipiac poll, suggest that they want someone else to run, that's pretty damning. And the governor he's raised $5 million already. He's been pretty aggressive in suggesting that he's going to raise money this time around instead of financing his own campaign. But $5 million doesn't go very far. And the question will be if the donors now stop giving him money and putting money in that direction. His agenda has changed.
He'll just spend his own.
Shifted direction. He could spend his own again, but even then, I think that he would have a pretty tough time. So he's got to shift focus, and I think the next 6 months are going to be crucial for him.
All right, Juan Vasquez, what do you think of the governor's prospects right now? Looking pretty low.
Every poll you see says that he's very low in the esteem of the electorate, and a lot of the letters we get reflect that as well. However, we're still 2 years out from the next general election, and everyone knows, Republicans are keenly aware, that when you get involved in a big primary fight, especially a fight that knocks out an incumbent, you could be in trouble in the general election. Democrats have not been very successful, as you well know, in state offices in the last 15, 20 years, 15, 10 years or so. And they don't want to give them an opening. They've got somebody there now that ran a very strong campaign to get an office, came out of nowhere, spent a lot of his money. And I think a lot of the base of the party is happy with Scott. Now, what happens 2 years from now, we don't know, but we do know that speculation at this point is often becomes irrelevant as you get closer to the election.
I have a final word on this, Michael.
Well, I just I agree with Juan, and I would not underestimate Rick Scott, who in 2 years, I think the national economy is going to be doing much better than it is now.
Florida
will benefit from that.
Yeah.
Housing is going to be back, and Governor Scott will benefit from that. He's going to have a lot of money that he's going to use to really go after whoever the Democrat is. And if it's, flip-flop Charlie Crist or Alex Sink, who we've seen is, she was kind of a dud last time, I just think that he's going to be in much better shape than people think now if the Democrats don't come up with somebody with some charisma and plausibility.
All right, well, we'll spend a couple of minutes here on stories about transparency. And I know Mary Ellen Kloss is working very hard on these stories about the amount of secrecy in the legislature, amount of openness or not. And you have, I know the editorial board as well, Juan Vasquez, they've been writing about this as well. But Mary Ellen, talk about what you're working on. I guess it's called Transparency 2.0.
Well, we have an interesting situation in that the legislative leadership has identified a couple years ago the need for more transparency in its budget process. We had a grand jury that really eviscerated the way the legislature handled it, and we had a House Speaker who was forced to resign because he tucked things into the budget outside of the public debate that benefited one of his supporters. So they moved in this direction of putting things on the budget process on a statewide website, and they actually signed a contract with a company to build a website, and they spent $5 million on it. Well, when the company built the website, they decided that they weren't going to launch it, and it's now been on the shelf, and it hasn't been available for anyone to use. And we've had access to it. We've asked the company for a password, and we've explored it a bit. And it would blow the lid off the secrecy that now takes place. Right now, the budget process is difficult to follow. Staff, both at the governor's level and legislative level, pretty much control all the pieces. And things are inserted at the last minute at the discretion of legislative leadership, despite the grand jury report. And all those things would be exposed under this new system.
Well, so don't we have sunshine?
It's on the shelf.
Don't we have something called sunshine laws here, or we're supposed to, unless that doesn't cover that, but are we supposed to know about all of these things? Should it not be so secret? Are they breaking the law?
Well, sure. Sure. No, they're not breaking the law. You have to ask for that. You have to ask. You have to know the vendor. You have to know where the contracts are that you should look for. This system connects all the dots. It's like it takes everything, every accounting, personnel, contracting, and budget database in the state, spins it in a centrifuge, and then makes it available with a simple search tool. That is really revolutionary, but it's nowhere. It's not going to see the light of day.
And you're going to be writing about this, by the way, on Sunday. Is that when that story is coming out?
Well, no, I wrote a little bit about
it again
today.
Oh, you did today.
We're going to be continuing to follow how contracts in this state are. There's a lot of abuse going on. Some things get in, and I actually have found a contract that has been renewed. That's a 20-year contract. Now, is there anything in it that we can think of that doesn't change in 20 years? Why the terms of something should not change in 20 years? Mm. But it's a guarantee of $400 million for one particular company. So,
well, and this just leads us to the fact that we are going to be doing a town hall meeting on the legislature before they begin meeting. In February, we're going to have several members of the Florida legislature, some local, some state. This will be, I believe, the last week of February. You can look forward to it on the radio. And we have an online conversation about state issues that's going to take place on our website after the new year. And this WLRN.org is where you can find out more about that. And Mary Ellen has been so fantastic in reporting stuff back to us through the Miami Herald. We'll be part of that as well. Mary Ellen, we look forward to reading more about this transparency effort. We're also going to continue talking. In fact, when we get back, we open up the phones to talk about the gun rights issues and the issue and how Newtown could happen or not happen here in Florida. We asked members of the Public Insight Network about that, so stay tuned. We're also going to ask Michael about the fiscal cliff. His book, The New New Deal, addresses some of those things, and we'll see what that means for Florida. So stay with us. You're listening to the Florida Roundup. Juan Vasquez, Mary Ellen Kloss, Michael Grunwald, and me, Phil Latzman, back in just a moment. And we welcome you back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Good afternoon. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Good to have you with us. And we're going to delve into a fiscal cliff discussion for just a moment before we get on the line with some of our callers and members of the Public Insight Network reacting to the shootings in Connecticut and how they relate here in Florida and gun control and all the other stuff we discussed earlier in the show. Stay with us, callers. Want to mention a couple of things. Florida's unemployment rate has dropped to its lowest level in 4 years. State officials today said the rate is 8.1%, down by 0.4% from October. Talking about what Michael talked about earlier is that Governor Scott's best hope is that the economy improves, and it is doing that right now. At least the jobless rate, lowest since November 2008, when it was 7.8. Still, there are 760,000 Floridians out of work, and it's still higher than the national average of 7.7. But Rick Scott has made job creation the hallmark of his administration. He hailed the report for giving more Floridians a paycheck for the holidays, although his polls, as we just said, kind of remain very low. Now, the unemployment rate could dramatically shoot up if the implications from the falling off the fiscal cliff are lived out in this 2013. Now, Michael Grunwald, the House is wrapped up for Christmas now without an agreement off of avoiding El Cliff Fiscal, but what could happen and what might have a specific impact for us here in Florida?
Sure. Well, what we saw last night was the House Republicans, who were just essentially trying to pass a PR bill to make President Obama look bad, and couldn't even get that through the House. So it's going to be very difficult to get anything done before January 1st, when tax rates will automatically go up for everybody, and there'll be these pretty massive spending cuts across the board. And essentially what that means is not just, you know, it's real anti-stimulus for the economy that really could push us towards a double-dip recession if they don't fix it quickly, but it means real cuts in the kind of spending we've been talking about. Mental health resources, right? School funding, you know, the teachers who are so heroic in Newtown. Everything that people like about government, the Pentagon and Social Security, those things are all going to be on the chopping block if they can't come up with some kind of deal. And of course, depending on what sort of deal they come up with, some of those things could be on the chopping block too.
Juan Vasquez, do you think this kind of hits home for us here in South Florida? We hear a lot about it, talked about on the national level, but can we relate to it here?
Oh, yes. Across the board, everybody who runs any kind of social welfare agency comes and talks to us to the editorial board, and they write letters and they say, you know, meals for seniors, Medicaid, everything is going to be affected, and we will feel it across the board.
Back to our discussion from earlier, we opened the show discussing gun control, and we asked the members this week of the Public Insight Network how the school shooting affected your views on gun control. We asked them also, did you view the incident as primarily a failure on mental health or gun control policy? How you are explaining the shooting to children? Do you feel more or less safe because Florida has issued more than a million concealed gun weapons permits, and now that is official. In fact, they've gone over the million mark, which is the most in the country. So we asked those questions to the Public Insight Network. And first, we're going to take a call. Let's see, who do we have on the line that we can talk to here? Who's been waiting longest? Is it Paul from South Miami? Is he one of the folks that we have on here, or is he a caller from earlier? Actually, let's just read Frank from Miami Lakes. He's the first guy that responded for us. He's a parent and a gun owner. He says, I believe we have the right to arm ourselves and protect ourselves and enjoy the sport of shooting. We should encourage safe and educated gun ownership at all age levels. Frank says, we've explained to our daughter that this incident was unfortunate and that many lives were shattered as a result of one person who obviously had a death wish. But we've explained that there are many heroes that day in the form of teachers that protected their kids and kept them safe until the authorities arrived. Mary Ellen, I would assume in Tallahassee there's a much different view of things than there is here in Miami. Is there sort of a divide between some of what is being said here and what's being said up there?
Well, not the I think the reader that you just quoted is pretty reflective of how the leadership in Tallahassee thinks. You know, let's educate people. The perspective is we may need some changes to maybe allow teachers to carry firearms, as you mentioned, Representative Baxley has suggested. Nobody has come to any broad conclusions yet, but as I think we've all concluded, this legislature is not likely to do any dramatic changes to the gun laws.
All right, Paul is in South Miami. We welcome you to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for your input, Paul.
Well, yes, thank you very much. I guess I'd like to add another perspective here. What about the responsibility of the gun owners themselves? And I hesitate to speak bad of the death of the dead, but if Nancy Lanza had her weapons securely locked away, particularly as has been reported that she was petitioning for custody of him, a guardianship of him, perhaps none of this would have happened. And I don't understand why we don't have a law that says that if you own a gun, you're responsible for it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If it's in your personal possession, that's one thing. If not, it has to be locked away in an approved gun safe someplace with you as the only one that has the combination. I mean, I just think that ought to be a part of this discussion, and I haven't heard anybody talk about it. So I thought I would throw that into the mix.
All right.
See see where it might go.
Thanks, Paul. We'll throw it over to Michael Grunwald.
Well, I think the caller probably does know why we don't have a law like that, and why, you know, in Florida and nationally, our politicians have pushed back so hard against bills to close the loophole so that, you know, you couldn't 40% of guns that are sold, there's no background check whatsoever, to make it harder to sell to somebody who has a criminal record or somebody who has mental health issues in the past. There's been incredible pushback coming from the NRA and from gun manufacturers and from gun supporters against even the feeling has been that there's a slippery slope. And if you do any kind of gun control or gun safety or whatever you want to call it, that's the inevitable, you know, pretty soon the government is going to be confiscating everybody's gun and we're going to live under tyranny.
Paul, thanks for your call. I've got a bunch of people, and I wanted to get to Justin from West Palm Beach. Thank you so much. Justin, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Hello, thank you.
Hi. So you say that there should be more time for mourning before we get into this type of discussion?
My actual point was that every time a massive shooting occurs, that you always hear, you know, the correct response is not to immediately politicize these events. I mean, they are tragedies, and it is a huge loss for the people involved. Also, what you see immediately happen is that, I don't want to pigeonhole someone and throw out just buzzwords, but you'll see a lot of people in the gun control lobby, they'll immediately come out and say, oh, we need to ban assault weapons without defining what an assault weapon is, or magazines. These laws immediately come up after a shooting incident, and no one is immediately out there to say, hey, you know, we should probably step back and review this as sane individuals. After, you know, people have calmed down from the grief, it's kind of like throwing fuel on a fire where you say, this enormous tragedy has happened and 37 people are dead. Let's immediately pass a law to make sure that it'll never happen.
Well, I think, and maybe I'll direct this over to Juan, but I think that we've seen this now how many times in the past few years? I mean, we have to, you know, think about Aurora that just happened over the summer, and the Virginia Tech a few years ago. I mean,
Columbine.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to, but I think it's at this point people are kind of throwing up their hands. Juan, do you think that too quick to start talking about these things, or is this feeling that they've happened so many times that when are we going to start making that discussion?
But I think the counter argument is, if not now, when? When is the best time? The best time is when everybody is focused on this topic. We know that the spotlight in terms of news events keeps moving. And I think the sensible thing from people who want something done is to say, this is the time to talk about it. I'd like to go back just for a moment to the point of the previous caller. The Herald has consistently supported sensible gun control measures like closing the loophole at gun sales. However, it is fair to say that the NRA has consistently preached gun safety, how to carry a weapon, how to load a weapon, and particularly how to store a weapon properly at home. So if a lot of people haven't done that, they have weapons and they don't properly store them, then they're not listening to the NRA.
But the NRA has fought any kind of legal measures that would put any kind of legal responsibility for you to do that.
Oh, absolutely. All of this voluntarily.
Mary Ellen?
Well, I think people may not realize, but Florida does have a gun lock law. There is a requirement, I think it's a second-degree misdemeanor. If you own a gun and you don't properly store it in a lockbox or a safe, and, you know...
But yet you can bring it to work.
The effectiveness
of it. You can bring it to your car with you, though. It seems like it would be hard to do.
You have to have it, if you keep it on your person, it's okay. If you keep it, if you have a concealed weapons permit and you carry it with you all the time, that's also legal. But if it's not there, it's supposed to be kept in a locked place. Now, whether this law has even been effective is an unknown. One's really studied that.
Let's go to David. David has actually been a victim of gun violence. He's calling us from Miami Beach. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. So, David, thanks for being part of this. What happened to you?
Well, Phil, I was gunned down on a busy New York City street. It was really an economic crime. And fortunately...
You were mugged.
Pardon me?
You were mugged.
Yeah, okay. I mean, fortunately, most people don't have experience with being shot. But it's really a devastating thing, not only for the victim, but for the victim's family and friends. It really has a tendency to metastasize. I'd like to make 3 points, if I may.
If you can make them quickly, just because I have a few other people and I want to get them on. So try to be concise. Try to get to the first and most important.
I'll be very concise.
Go ahead.
One is that high-profile shootings mask a larger problem. Roughly 12,000 people are going to die in the United States in 2013 as a result of gun homicides. Secondly, I think as a society, we really need to think about whether or not we want to have fewer guns, fewer deadly weapons. And thirdly, I think that we need accountability, particularly for handguns. The reason that a .45, which shot me point blank in New York, was available is because somebody was able to purchase it in a southern state, presumably,
right,
where there's less paperwork. And that person was not accountable for who they transferred it to and who that person transferred it to,
right,
and so on.
And so this is why some people say it has to be a federal thing, Mike Grunwald, that there has to be a general gun law for every state, so that, because you can obviously carry them over the state lines and the laws are completely different.
But as I've said, the Republicans still control the House of Representatives, so there's going to be a lot of talk and nothing's going to happen, just like happened after Columbine and after Aurora and after Tucson, and it will be the same after this, would be my guess.
David, thanks for your call. Appreciate that. Very good comments. A couple more if we can fit them here from our Public Insight Network folks, and one of them is Mike, who is in Miami. Mike, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Quickly, if you could, we're just running out of time, but I'd love to hear your point of view on this.
Well, we don't fight forest fires by giving out more matches. And I don't think we're going to accomplish anything by having crazy arguments on one side about melting all the guns and more crazy arguments on the other about arming all the teachers. We have to start acting like adults and confront this. And I agree, we need to confront it now. If not now, when? Because otherwise we're just going to forget about it next week and move away. We've had, in the last month, people killed in Florida over pizza, pork chops, and loud music. And it's only because somebody was standing around with a gun at hand.
Yeah. Mike, thanks very much for your call. I guess the last word to Juan Vasquez on this at the Miami Herald. Do you think there'll be any meaningful change either on the federal level, on the state level, or are we just kind of jumping up and down and nothing's going to happen?
Well, first of all... It's more likely at the federal level than at the state level. But having said that, if they can't agree, if Republicans can't agree even on their own proposal because they are so anti-tax, right after an election, when the president's main proposal was to increase taxes on those earning over $250,000 a year, then I don't see how this can possibly get through the House of Representatives.
And the last word on that, Juan, very hard working on the editorial page for the Miami Herald this weekend. Thanks for taking out the time on this busy Friday, Juan.
Thank you, Phil.
Juan Vasquez. Michael Grunwald, his book is The New Deal, and it is available everywhere now. The usual spots, to Amazon.com. And
Books and Books.
Books and Books.
That's where you got to be buying
local,
it.
Exactly. Buy from your local Books and Books in Coral Gables and Miami Beach. Michael, thanks for your time, as always.
Thank you,
Phil. Great to see you here. Mary Ellen Kloss is the Tallahassee Bureau Chief for the Miami Herald. She's always fantastic. Great insights from her. Great to have you, and we'll see you next year in February for our Town Hall.
Yes, looking forward to that. Thank you.
And that does it for the Florida Roundup this Friday, December 21st, 2012. Yes, we're all still here. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and Happy New Year for those that are going away. If you missed any of the show, we got it on our airwaves tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. We also post it on our website, WLRN.org. Florida Roundup produced by Alicia Zuckerman. Elaine Chen, our associate producer, executive producer for WLRN is Peter J. Meritz. For WLRN Miami Herald News, Dan Gretsch. Our technical supervisor is Paul Leary. Sorry for all the callers and the feedback we weren't able to get to. South Florida Arts Beat is next. And until next week, I'm Phil Latzman. Stay informed, South Florida.